Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. The food donation for October is peanut butter. We invite the children to sit up front for the Time for All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
Good morning, everyone. For those of you who do not know, my name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF. And today we are talking about joy. And the story that we're about to tell is an old folk story about joy. Once there was a great library in a place called Alexandria. There was a terrible fire, and all the books were full of their wisdom were destroyed, except for one. It was a very ordinary book, dull and uninteresting, so it was sold for a few pennies to a poor man who barely knew how to read.
So now this dull book, as uninteresting as it seemed, was probably the most valuable book in the world. For on the inside of the back cover, there were, in large round letters, a few sentences that contained the secret of the joy stone. This was a tiny pebble that could forever bring joy to whoever held it. The writing declared that this precious pebble was lying somewhere on the shore of the Black Sea, among thousands of other pebbles that were exactly like it, except in one particular way. So whereas all these other pebbles were cold when you touched them, this one, when you touched it, was warm, as if it were alive.
The man rejoiced in his good luck. He sold everything he had, borrowed a large sum of money, which would last him a year, and made for the Black Sea, where he set up his tent and began a painstaking search for the joy stone. This was the way he went about it. He would lift a pebble. If it was cold to the touch, he would not throw it back to the shore, because if he did that, he might be lifting and feeling the same stone dozens of times. No, he would throw it to the sea.
So each day, for hours and hours and hours, this man persevered in his patient endeavor. He would lift up a pebble, and if it felt cold, he would throw it into the sea. He'd lift up another pebble, and if it felt cold, he would throw it into the sea. And he did this over and over and over. He spent a week. He spent a month. He spent 10 months, a whole year at this task, dreaming of the day when he would find that pebble that felt warm and alive, and then he could lead a joyful life. So on and on he went. He'd lift a pebble, hold it, feel that it was cold, and then he'd throw it back into the sea. Hour after hour, day after day, week after week, still no joy stone. One evening, he picked up a pebble, and it was warm to the touch. But through sheer force of habit, he threw it into the Black Sea. Oh no, right? Oh no, he spent all that time looking for joy, all those hours and hours looking for that stone that would give him joy in life. And then when he found it, he threw it away accidentally. So the moral of this story is that joy is available to us. Each and every one of us has the ability to find joy. We just have to recognize it when we find it. You can go to your classes. As we begin our time of sharing personal joys and sorrows, I'll invite Jennifer Adamson to come up and light her own candle this morning as I read about a sorrow that she's going through in her life. Her mother-in-law and member Chris Adamson's mother has pneumonia. A family friend as well was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. So we hold both of those sorrows and concerns in our hearts and minds and wish them well on their journey toward healing. And if you do have a personal brief joy or sorrow that you'd like to share, I would invite you to come forward at this time.
Hello, I'm Hillary Key, and I have a rare professional joy, but it is a spiritual joy for me as well. When I was 26, many years ago, I wrote down an intention. When I started my art studio, I said, I want to have 3 to 4 studios and 1,000 students, and we teach them one by one in very small groups. Well, this week, with 3 studios and a nonprofit, I counted the enrollment for the first time in 10 years because someone was on her honeymoon, and we got through 19 years of hard and dedicated work and heart work, 1,005.
Good morning, I'm Sherry Tanner. So today is my middle child's 27th birthday. I can't believe he's 27. And so happy birthday to my son, Ryan. And also another joy is me and Jim will celebrate our 1-year anniversary since he came into my life a year ago. So, yay.
I'm Will. Yesterday was the funeral of a friend of mine, Harvey Okada, who was a pretty good friend for about 20 years. He was from a Japanese-American background and started his life in one of the relocation camps during the Second World War, something that he didn't seem to carry around with him very much or think about too much, but which I was aware of at any rate, and just to say that I'm going to miss him.
I'm lighting this candle in memory of a little boy by the name of Raiden Ginsburg, my friend's great-grandson. He and his babysitter were in a crosswalk almost 2 weeks ago and were hit by a driver who ran a red light. Raiden died in the hospital. Yeah.
Don't run away. 25 years ago, this Wednesday, John Dobrik got me up there and married me to this beautiful lady. It's been a joy, a love, and a great partnership.
Good morning, I'm Mary Botts, and I just wanted to give you an update on Steve Doan, because a lot of people have been asking me. And he is home, he is doing a lot better. He still has some infection in his jaw, but it is getting better with antibiotics and rest.
Steve Doan.
Good morning, my name is Bruce. I want to wish my mother, who had a great pleasure of meeting a couple of years ago, her 90th birthday. So, happy birthday, Mom. The other concern I have to do with many miles away. Concern for the Kurds in Turkey. We deserted them, and I want to say I'm sorry that we did. We lost a good ally, and it made our country a little bit less secure because of the rise of dictators and the possible possible escape terrorists. Hate to give you that news, but it's my concern. And when this person, who you all know very well, said that, well, our terrorists is 6,000-7,000 miles away, why do we need to be concerned about them? Just look at 9/11 and the terrorists that were on the plane that, you know, what happened from there. So I'm just hoping that we will find some way to get into better light where we don't have wounds that coming to what it may come to. So we need to hold up our head and fight to make sure that the war doesn't go down. Thank you.
Hey, pretty minor joy, but still a joy. My nephew, Kasawar Buck, turned 17 today.
As always, we know there's so much richness in this room, so much going on in the lives of the people who are here. And I invite you to reach out to someone. Reach out to someone you might not have seen for a little while and find out how they're doing, because this community is based on the nurture and support of one another. I now invite you into a time of reflection, meditation, and prayer. This morning we consider joy. What is it? Where does it come from? How do we receive it? Is it something fleeting and ephemeral that floats like a seed on the wind, or is it something available to us all the time? We can see joy as a side effect, as the natural outgrowth of gratitude. Sometimes gratitude comes without effort, unbidden, wells up inside of us like a fountain overflowing. And sometimes we have to work to find something to be grateful for. Sometimes we struggle amidst the chaos of our own lives, the larger world. Sometimes in the midst of our own doubts and insecurities, feeling grateful can be challenging, and thus feeling joy can feel like it's outside the range of possibility for us. But I believe that the receiving of joy begins with an open heart. And so I invite you into a moment of silence together with this community to consider how your heart might be opened, how you might find yourself in a place of gratitude and wonder. This morning we ask of ourselves where joy has bubbled up in our own lives. We ask of ourselves who those people are who have brought joy into our lives. And we also take time to acknowledge those everyday indicators of joy, all those things that might be around us, the colors and the sounds, the things we touch, the things we feel, all those things that give access to joy in our lives. They may be as simple as a cup of coffee to start our morning, or seeing the sight of a blackbird outside our window. Whatever it is, and however we receive joy, let us be open to it. May it be so.
Reading from Ingrid Fattel Lee, excerpt from Joyful. I never fail to feel joy when I see a little flower poking through a crack in the sidewalk, blithely asserting itself among the solid rectangles of the modern city. Though it stands alone in a place where it obviously doesn't belong, it bears no self-consciousness and seems unbothered by the obstacles presented by the site in which it happened to sprout. It does its best to harvest the rays of sunlight, capture the rains, and smile open its petals to the sky. It was some variation on this process that transformed the High Line from a disused railroad into a secret garden. Originally full of freight trains to reach built for freight trains to reach the factories and warehouses along New York's west side, the High Line was in operation until 1980. By the 90s, the structure had become so derelict that local residents were lobbying for its demolition. As landscaped architect James Corner tells it, most people had only ever seen the underside of the High Line, and it was just hulking steel, rusting and dripping and dark and dank. Nobody knew that the top side had this beautiful self-sown carpet of green. Whether blown by winds or excreted by passing birds, seeds landed in the rotting wood of the railroad ties and took root. There were vines up there and grasses and perennial flowers and weird shrubs, says Corner. It was just magical. You couldn't help but be impressed by nature's resiliency in terms of being able to just body forth this amazing playground of life in a bereft landscape. Inspired by this self-created Eden, a foundation formed with the purpose of turning it into an urban park. And architects from around the world were invited to submit ideas for its design. Many designers treated the site as a blank canvas, a site like any other to develop. But for Corner, who was enchanted by the renewal that had already begun, it seemed the right thing to do was as little as possible. Though many subtle changes were made to enable safe access, create a system of planting beds and water collection, and increase the biodiversity of the vegetation, the High Line feels like a space still in the process of revival, a continuation of what nature began for itself. In renewal, we find perhaps the clearest expression of a truth that underlies all of the aesthetics that bring joy. That the drive toward joy is synonymous with the drive toward life. Joy evolved for the express purpose of helping to steer us toward conditions that would encourage us to flourish. It is our inner guide to the things that animate, stimulate, and sustain us. Put more simply, joy is what makes life worth living.
What is blocking your joy? I'm currently part of a nonprofit theater company that works to bring Shakespeare to kids who otherwise might not be exposed to it outside the school system. So Thursday morning this past week, 98 school children studying Shakespeare in school were brought in from struggling areas of Los Angeles to see a performance that we were putting on. We were warned to be ready for anything. Talking during our show, loud vocal responses, I see teachers nodding, yes, laughter. But I have to say, the kids were quiet during it all. And it probably helps that we started with this big sword fight. But through the appearance of the three witches and all the way to the end, they were enraptured. Afterward, the entire company sat on the stage and we took questions from these kids. And they were shy at first. So a member of the company asked them if seeing Shakespeare had been easier than just reading it. And there was a loud affirmative response. Yes, yes, lots of shaking heads and smiles. This was awesome, one kid shouted. Again, the sword fights really helped. And then the questions started coming. How did we learn all those lines? Where did the fog come from? How did we keep from accidentally killing each other with the swords? The funny thing is that I found myself disengaged from most of it that morning. I'd gotten up at 6 o'clock to make the drive to make an 8 o'clock a.m. call time. For the theater people in the room, this was an 8 o'clock a.m. call time. Yes, exactly. I didn't make that noise, but I thought it. I'd put on my makeup and the fake blood and various costumes,
glued on my beard for when I played the old man in the show, and I went through everything that I was supposed to do, and I knew that what we were doing was a good thing. But I hadn't felt much of anything that morning. And then as the questions got away from Shakespeare and more into acting in general, one kid asked a question. How do you deal with auditions you don't get? He said. And immediately one of my cast members spoke up. I want you all to know something, she said with confidence. You are enough. I don't try and be anything but who I am. I don't try to give them fireworks. If they want me, that's great. And if they don't, that's fine too. I have to remember that I am enough as I am. And if there's anything you take with you today, I hope it's that you are enough. Now, those aren't her exact words, of course, but they're pretty close, I think, because they really cut through me in that moment. As I drove home, I wondered why they had resonated with me so much. And I wondered why I hadn't felt all that much that morning until she had said that. And then I realized the two things, as so often happens in life, were related. Because there had been such joy available that morning. The excitement of the kids, the joy of what we were doing, the joy of the performance itself, of being with people who were working in concert to tell this age-old story. And something had blocked that joy from coming through for me. And those words, simple as they are, you are enough, are certainly ones I've said to others. I've said it to this congregation. I think I said it in the very first sermon I ever gave here. But it had been a while since I said it to myself. You see, and I think this is so true for so many of us, whatever we do or however we live, it can be hard to feel like you're enough, that you have all the skills to do everything well in your job, that you have all the capacity to be the best friend or spouse or parent or caregiver or whatever else you might be. So many of us carry around the feeling that we aren't quite enough. If only we were richer or healthier or more educated or better looking or better at this or better at that, then maybe, just maybe, we'd be enough then. And I realized on that long ride home from Los Angeles, that this isn't just about healthy self-esteem. It's about a narrative about ourselves that gets in the way of experiencing joy. Because if we're worried that we're enough, then of course we're not able to let in those joys when we encounter them. We're like that pilgrim in our Time for All Ages story this morning. We're searching for the joy stone, and we become so intent on the work of finding joy, we're going to do this right, that we miss it when we actually touch it. For me, this is an old story in my life, one about not having value unless I'm really good at things. And in ministry, it's so often a struggle to feel like I'm good enough, I'm enough. And I think Reverend Karen can probably relate to that feeling. And the truth is, in some ways, I'm really not enough. Not really. Not for all this job could require. But I know this isn't just me alone, right? I mean, this is the teachers and the caregivers and people in helping professions and you parents out there and you grandparents. I think you can relate. We really can't do enough, any one of us. We can never do all the things that need to be done. That list is long. We don't even want to write out that list, right? It's too long. And the truth is, if you're wonderful as a parent at listening and uplifting your children, then you probably struggle in some other area of parenting. Maybe it's discipline or setting boundaries. Or if you're that rock of a spouse who works hard to make sure that all those basic needs are more than met. Maybe you struggle to have energy to be fully present for those who you love, who you're doing those very things for. I think there are so many roles in life that we are in where we can't really do all the areas of that role well without neglecting some other area. I know that while the roles and circumstances are different for all of us, we often find ourselves in that same boat. So in my car ride home, I had to stop and take a breath, and I invite you to do that too when you find yourself feeling this way. Because no matter what, we can always find some area in our lives where we can't quite do enough. And my goodness, is that a losing game to set up for ourselves? There's no joy to be found if we're searching for value outside of ourselves. We are just roaming in a barren desert. We're covering the miles, yes, but there's no scenery to be had, and more importantly, no water. The real secret to finding joy is to realize that in our inability to do all those things, in our recognition that we can never really do enough, is the realization that, of course, we ourselves are still enough. Because what we bring to the table is unique and something no one else can bring. And it's enough. Whatever you're doing, wherever you are in life, whatever roles and responsibilities you hold, you are enough for them. And I think when we really know this, when we can really feel this, then we can truly begin that practice of feeling joy. In her book, Joyful, which we heard about in our reading today, Ingrid Lee details the feelings of joy in connection with the tangible world around us. So she's distilled them down to 10 ways that we access joy, and I'll only briefly touch on these, so I invite you to read this book. But she names them as energy, abundance, freedom, harmony, play, surprise, transcendence, magic, celebration, and renewal. The book details each of these kinds of joy with the important understanding that all these types of joy are readily available to us. Joy isn't hard to find, she writes. In fact, it's all around us. Isn't that a relief? Joy isn't hard to find. In fact, it's all around us. Lee's contention is that the physical world around us is full of things that spark those feelings of joy. Our job is simply to make sure that we are open and observing and able to receive that joy in. Energy is all around us, she says. Sounds, color, sunlight. Abundance refers to taking in all our senses can, building on old human needs of filling our basket full of freshly picked berries or overwhelming our senses. We love to be in situations of abundance. Again, the trick is to acknowledge them when we're there. Freedom refers to our connection to nature, to being in relationship to the larger world around us. It's a way of positioning environmentalism as a joy rather than just a duty. Harmony is the practice of enjoying the rhythms we find in life, the moments of symmetry and miraculous order, while play harkens back to the child in us and our natural inclinations to enjoy whimsy. Surprise speaks for itself. And transcendence is all about lifting us up above our current lives and routines, but paradoxically, at the same time, bringing us closer to what is most important in our lives. Celebration invites us to feel gratitude for what is our lives through the process of celebrating, whether that's a birthday party or a carnival or just a quiet moment of acknowledgement of celebration. Magic is interesting, as Lee explains it. She refers to the rupturing of the membrane between what is possible and impossible, or seemingly so. Magic, as she describes it, is about cultivating wonder so that we then seek answers through learning and exploration. Case in point, Nikola Tesla, whose work with induction motors led to the system of alternating current that powers our houses, was inspired by a seemingly magical incident as a child. So he's stroking the family cat, right? And the cat's back sparks. See these visible sparks, and his mother tells him, put down the cat before the cat catches on fire. But the sense of joy and wonder in his own mind was sparked by that incident, and off he went. We heard about renewal in our earlier reading, at tapping into something that fuels nature itself, of which we are a part of, the idea of birth and rebirth. And all these ways of receiving joy are directly connected to the world around us. And while Lee doesn't actually use the term religious naturalism, much of her work aligns with it. Religious naturalism is about focusing on the concrete world, humanity, and all the world around us as the source of answering the big questions of life. It's right here, those answers, if we look around, if we let it in. A religious naturalist makes meaning of the world by finding answers in the realities of the world itself. Transcendent experiences are directly related to an appreciation or connection with the world and its inhabitants. All of these earthly ways that Lee suggests tapping into joy are very reflective of this theological perspective, which is also, I believe, deeply embedded in Unitarian Universalism itself. UUism is, of course, also a faith tradition rooted in a deep social conscience. And that means that sometimes, a lot of the time, we talk about things like injustice and oppression, really important things. And so things like joy can seem trivial to talk about when there is so much hurt in the world. I mean, we don't necessarily look at what's going on in our country or in the White House and then say, let's have a discussion about joy, right? But I contend there is no way to combat these things if we haven't cultivated joy. I remember a community meeting I was at a few years ago with several other clergy members. And Reverend Karen, I'm going to be really careful to not name any names here and so on. So don't out me if I give any details here that I shouldn't be. But it was somewhere, this meeting, and a pastor from another faith community arrived who was an expert on the issue at hand, truly an expert, which was homelessness. And this pastor could rattle off facts about those who were struggling with finding homes. She had passion for this topic. But she was also tired. She was also burnt out. You could see it in that face, hear it in her words, which grew angrier and harsher as the meeting wore on. And it was clear in that meeting there would be no easy answers to the problems the community was facing, and she wanted answers. She was at that point. And I remember another clergy member, braver than I was, gently inviting us to take a breath and then saying something like, it's important for me to ground the work I do in a place of joy. And I also remember this person standing up, clenching her fists and opening her mouth to scream, I work from a place of joy too. Needless to say, this was one tense meeting. But what I came away from that meeting, besides a kind of warning about where I don't want to end up myself, but was a realization that this person, for all her very honorable intentions, noble intentions even, had lost touch with joy somewhere along the way. And it was not a pretty sight. But the good news that I know now is that this is surmountable. It is something that we can overcome because there is truly something marvelous available to us in our minds. You see, I believe all that potential joy is still stored in there. Now, I might have been sleepwalking through that performance on Thursday morning, much like Lady M with her candle, but that's okay. Because now I can go back in my mind and realize what was happening. And I did that this morning with you just now. I feel that electricity in that room of those with those 98 kids sitting there, actually enraptured by what they were seeing. I can think of their eager faces, their questions afterward. I can witness the joy of that moment, even if I sort of missed it then. And maybe that person who came to that meeting so harried and stressed can now look back and feel some sense of joy for the meaningful connections she was able to make, the good work she was able to do, because she certainly deserves to feel some joy around that. And I contend that this is available to all of us, that sometimes our lives were so busy because we were focused on feeling like we weren't enough, that we couldn't do enough, that we missed out on some joy that was right there available to us. And that's okay. Those memories are still there if you kind of do a little mining. Feel free to visit those memories and let that joy in that you might have missed somewhere along the way. And in that process, it's also good practice for that practice that I invite you to do going forward, which begins by asking ourselves an important question. What might be blocking joy for you? And then we deepen our journey into joy by asking, what joys are already around you? And finally, we ask, how can you let that joy in? Into your heart, into your mind, into your being. Not only are you enough, and you are also joy.
In addition to our regular offering today, once a month, UUCF shares half of the offertory collection that is not designated as pledges to a local charity selected by the Social Action Committee. This Sunday, the recipient is Welcome Home OC, which is sponsored by the Orange County United Way to provide for permanent supportive housing for those who are homeless in Orange County. We thank you for your generosity. Thank you.
closing hymn, we will be singing hymn number 100, I've Got Peace Like a River. Please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
Extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Would you please join hands for our closing words? I like the message of that song. We're not looking for more joy somewhere. That's another one of our hymns. We know we have joy right now, joy like a fountain. I invite you to go out into the world knowing that you hold that joy and that you are called to share that joy with others. Until we meet again, amen, shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be. Go now in peace and have a wonderful week.